It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will. But then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
So, I'm assuming you don't have the latest, but in general, how are you and your wife feeling about the upcoming Wonder Woman video game?
I hadn't heard of that.
Yeah.
Upcoming Wonder Woman video game?
Yes. Single player narrative, and for the first time since Shadow of Mordor and Shadow of War, it's going to use the Nemesis system.
Oh.
That Warner Brothers patented so nobody else could use it, and then they haven't used it since.
I hadn't heard of this at all. Huh.
Oh, yeah. This is the thing. The reason it comes up now is, like, today, or maybe yesterday, a bunch of art and gameplay information and stuff was leaked online. And almost instantly taken down, which lends it way more credence.
Hmm. Oh, that might be why I haven't heard of it, because I get a lot of news directly from DC, and so they didn't announce it.
No, they wouldn't have had that stuff. And I can't remember the company, but it's a good company developing it that hasn't had anything for a while. Can't remember of stuff. But looks pretty cool. Apparently the main antagonist is going to be the Sorceress Circe, and there's going to be a whole thing where Wonder Woman has to go back to Themyscira to help, but everybody in Themyscira is kind of bitter because she left. Yeah. And it sounds like they're going to do the Nemesis system in a way where not only do you grow rivals and enemies, but you can also create allies based on it and how you deal with it. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of the action fighting stuff is being compared to the Arkham games. It's being compared to Shadow of Mordor, Shadow of War.
We didn't play those Lord of the Rings games.
You should, or at least you should play the first one. I tried the second one. I couldn't really do it. The second one is very strange because the second one came out and got monetized to absolute shit. And so everyone hated it. And then eventually they got rid of all that stuff. But now it just feels weird. I don't know. I tried it and I wasn't as into it. I wasn't really into the first one, except the mechanics were fascinating. Hmm. The Nemesis system was really cool. I'm not a Lord of the Rings person, and I didn't really get into the world too much, but I played all three of the first one. It was good.
I mean, I heard the system. A lot of people liked it. And
it's really neat. For those of you who aren't deep into this stuff, the Nemesis system was a thing that a company, I forget which company, probably EA, created, where any random person on the battlefield, and originally it was just tons of orcs because it was Lord of the Rings. If, like, they kill you, and obviously you reset or reload or whatever happens, but, like, that orc gets, like, promoted, and slowly over time, if you get attacked, you get attacked by the same one, and, like, they'll ambush you and shit like that, and they'll essentially, these little peons that video games are full of can grow into individual, like, nemeses against you. And they'll even show up because it's built into the story why you come back to life or whatever. And so they'll show up and be like, didn't I already kill you? And, like, you'll develop a real rivalry and things. And it's pretty neat. I kind of digged it.
Yeah.
Dug it.
Digged
Whatever.
it.
Digged it. I digged it. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Magic the Talking Hat podcast, the only podcast in the world willing to be open about the fact that Kristen Wiig used her influence in the industry to steal the role of Cheetah from me in Wonder Woman 1984. They told me I was a lock for it, and then she just came in and said, "Oh, I'm Kristen Wiig," and threw around some of her Kristen Wiigness, and next thing you know, I never got the call.
Swooped in. She just swooped in.
Yes, I'm Tony, aka Cheetah.
And I'm William, aka William. And
Hashtag Tony is the real Cheetah.
this is episode 692.
692, and I'm so excited because we have an email. I'm also excited because you have a very nice hat on.
Yeah, one of the
Lovely
best.
hat. Because we finally got together and hung out in a Perkins for 3.5 damn
Yeah, a
hours.
long time. It's good.
It actually was very bad on my back.
Oh, sorry.
It didn't feel like it at the time. I was perfectly comfortable, but later I was like, I probably shouldn't have sat in one seat in a booth in a restaurant for 3.5 hours.
Yeah.
And so there
Oops.
was a lot of stretching things out later and stuff. Although I'm getting way better. I'm actually now stepping down the over-the-counter pain meds I've been taking because I'm doing pretty good.
Good.
I'm thinking I'm gonna hit the gym, not anything fancy, but I can do my PT work much better there, and it's a treadmill. And so walking, as we talked about, walking is huge for your back, especially for my back. And even if I'm like hunched over or whatever, it's still good for me, so I can walk as long as I can walk. I would have done it today, but my weekend's been crazy, so I'm not. I'm a zombie today. And somebody, dun, 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 is now a master's degree holder in telling people what's wrong with them.
Well, yeah, I mean.
Sorry. Brainwashing people into telling you what you think is wrong with them as though they believed it themselves.
I mean, it's going to be a while before. So, like, the school has to make it official.
Yeah.
I don't, there are things that aren't graded in the class yet. I mean, I don't have any reason to think that there's going to be any issues there, but
You gotta be careful. Kristen Wiig makes a phone call and
all
you're
over.
failing.
So, it's going to take a while for that to be official. And the test I passed a few weeks ago, that body or organization or whatever also needs to make it official. Because when I'm practicing with a license, even a temporary one at the beginning, I'll have like three credentials, like the people put on their walls or whatever. I'll have the Master's of Science degree. I'll have the National Counselor certification, and I'll have the State of Iowa license. And it's going to take a few months for all of that stuff to
All
come
right,
through.
never mind then. It's not interesting. In fact, I'll just write your graduation present.
I
Nothing's happened, people. Nothing to see here. Move on. Not a milestone at all.
school, no, it's still miles. School's over. I don't know if I'll try to get a PhD later, but even if I do, it's not going to be the same kind of grind that this was at all.
No, but you will because we talked about it. We invented a couple different forms of psychotherapy at Perkins, and I don't care about it, so I'm giving them all to William, and he's going to do doctoral thesis on them.
Okay. But yeah, so it's like I at least psychologically, I feel like it school's over. 'Cause like even when I think of getting a PhD, it's not going to be like this was. Or any other
Well, it's
school for that
probably not
matter.
going to be real soon.
No, not I'll
I
take at
don't think
least.
you're like, and next year, PhD.
Yeah. No. Well, I mean, next fall maybe? I don't know. That might be too soon also, but
You're
we'll
just a
see.
lunatic, aren't you?
We'll see.
You're
Well,
just an absolute lunatic.
mean, it's like high school, bachelor's degree, master's degree. Those are all like mad dashes to get to a certain place. PhD, you're There's nowhere to go. You're just finishing your PhD.
Like a year after your master's.
I might wait longer. I don't know. I haven't even decided if I'm going to do it at all. I have time to think about it, decide, which I don't want to do right now. So, but it's what I'm saying is it's like, and also, so there's going to be a lot of milestones to come. Like eventually, I got to get permanent licensure, and maybe I will get a PhD. And when either of those things happen, it's going to be a big deal. But like, whatever I was doing the day before that milestone hit, I'm going to be doing the same thing the day after, right? It's like, this is the real watershed moment right here. Everything after this is, frosting on a cake, which
Ladies and
I
gentlemen,
love
William.
frosting.
Even when his life has is exciting, it's not that exciting. And he will be the first to explain to you why.
I'm just saying, it is a big deal to me, and I'm very happy about it.
Well, let's talk about the most important and objectively awesome part. What did I get you for your graduation present? I've been
Oh.
sitting on this for a while.
Well, August, you think it'll be a trip?
I think it should be August. I mean, I guess we can push it back even further, but definitely not June or July. You and I both have too much going on then, so I think probably
Yeah,
August.
a
But
trip,
it's up, you got to figure out what works for your schedule.
right? But a trip to medieval times in Schaumburg, is in Schaumburg.
He's in Schaumburg. We're gonna
Yeah.
drive up on a Saturday, go to Medieval Times, stay in a hotel somewhere because I ain't driving all that in one day. And then come back Sunday.
In the cave, in the cable guy when Matthew Broderick and Jim Carrey go.
I, like most people, have never seen the cable guy.
Well, in the cable guy, they do you know the premise of it at least?
Sort of, yeah. And I think I've seen clips from the Medieval Times section of it.
Yeah, the joke is the joke of the film basically is that cable guys are like tech geniuses that not only can they get you free cable, but they can do all kinds of other things too, including surveil you and things like that. Well, this cable guy, did Matthew Broderick's character some favors, but didn't leave it there. He wanted them to be friends, right? It was like, oh, well, I do you some favors and we're friends. And so Matthew Broderick has to deal with this situation where he kind of has to go along with the cable guy, or else the cable guy will take away some stuff, or maybe report him for stealing cable from someone else and he'll get in trouble. So Broderick gets sort of blackmailed into being friends with this crazy cable guy. And one of the things that the cable guy plans for them to do is go to medieval times. But more than that, he arranges it because, he does the cable for all the people that work at medieval times, right? So he can get favors from them too. He works it out so that he and Matthew Broderick can like be on the in the actual arena fighting and whatever. And then while they're fighting, they play the music from that Star Trek episode where Kirk and Spock.
Oh,
It's pretty funny. I thought it was pretty good, that film, but whatever.
I mean, it did get sort of reevaluated, and people were like, it was just too far ahead of its time. Like, people nowadays are like, it's actually really good. We just sort of didn't get it at the time, which that's fine. I'm still not into it. But it does sound like it's basically our relationship.
Yeah, basically.
I could see that. You as maybe this is the answer to who plays us in the movie, Matthew Broderick and Jim Carrey. Although Jim Carrey's gonna have to put on a lot of weight. I was just watching a thing about method acting. Did you know Bill Murray played Hunter S. Thompson in a movie, and he hung out with Hunter S. Thompson as part of the research and went like hardcore method such that it like fucked up SNL.
Oh no, I didn't
Because
know
he
that.
like showed up for SNL and like he was all Hunter S. Thompson. Like,
I
I
don't.
did not know this exists.
No.
And I kind of really want to see it, and I also really kind of don't. it's called Where the Buffalo Roam, and it's from like 80 or something. No, it couldn't have been that. It must have been late 80s. I did not know this exists.
I
And
didn't
I'm
either.
kind of curious. I mean, I'm not that into Hunter S. Thompson at this point, but that'd be weird to see. For those of you just joining us, we have a hat. It is magical in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. And people, lovely, kind Welsh people, email into that with stuff for us to talk about, questions, topics, comments, manifestos, whatever. The hat magically forwards it to us. We read them, talk about them. That's the show, except most of the time we're not doing any of So, other than hanging out with me on Friday, how's your week been?
Well, we're still watching that Dark Matter, Dark Matters, or whatever,
Oh, yeah.
that show. It got better,
Oh, nice.
but I mean it's interesting enough to keep watching, and it did get a little bit better. Let's see. Oh, we watched The Postman last night.
Oh, what brought that on?
Well, we watched all that Mad Max stuff, and I recall liking the Postman. I recall thinking it was okay. I mean, it wasn't perfect, but I didn't think it deserved all the hate it got. I thought, at the time, I think I explained this at the time, Costner was kind of overexposed, and he directed the movie, and it seemed weird. It seemed like a vanity project, and there are things in the film that make it look like that too. So it's like, yeah, I get it. I get it. People were annoyed, but it didn't make it a horrible picture, and there were some really good performances in there, by some, young actors or young actors at the time, but also recently I saw this video, the guy who wrote the books, there's several books, I guess,
Oh, okay.
and he complained a little bit about how he felt like he should have been consulted more in the making of the film, and he had some critiques of it, but he, in general, liked it and thought that it hit all the high points and made most of the important points that he wanted to make in the book. So I thought, well, that's kind of interesting. That's pretty good coming from an author, and especially this one, because I got the impression that he was probably really nitpicky about that stuff. Not all authors are, but he was. So I thought, well, I want to watch it again. Abby wasn't sure she ever saw it, so I still liked it. It was over the top in some places with some of the scenes, and the music was really cheesy, and some of the moments were really corny and stuff, but I thought it was okay. I mean, I don't know. Did you ever see it?
I did not. I think because that was at peak Costner glut.
Oh my gosh, yes.
And I
And
had been pretty into it. I watched a lot, like I really liked Wyatt Earp. Prince of Thieves I love because it is so terrible. Like I really like Mel Brooks' Men in Tights. And there's a lot of reasons to like it. I think the main reason I like it is primarily it is a parody of Prince of Thieves, which was such a terrible movie that it really like scratched an itch for me. I was like, that is a stupid thing that happened in that thing. But I think, yeah, I think Postman happened about the time I was like, I'm a little Costnered out.
Well, I mean, I didn't even like, say, Dances with Wolves. I mean, I didn't hate it, but I didn't think it deserved all the
I have
accolades it
never
got.
seen Dances with Wolves for a variety of reasons as time has moved on, but the primary one being my mom so hardcore wanted me to see it that like I had to like rebel.
Well, I mean, I saw it in the theater, and it looked amazing. But I mean, I didn't. Aside from the cinematography, I couldn't really see what was so great about it. And Waterworld was just terrible, in my opinion. But
Well,
I saw The Postman anyway, and even though, I think maybe my standards were pretty low, actually, I thought it was okay. I didn't. I kind of liked it. And this time seeing it, yeah, it was fine. glad I
Okay.
watched it again, actually, but I don't know. I feel like if the Costner fatigue thing hadn't been an issue, I don't think it would have been like a blockbuster or anything, but I don't think people would have hated it as much as they say. But I don't know. And I mean, Costner's kind of made a comeback recently with some of the stuff he's been doing, so
Well, especially because Yellowstone, but yeah.
yeah, Yellowstone. Well, yeah. So we
I
saw that, and what else? Oh, Abby has started to play Elder Scrolls Online.
Oh yeah, you said you were gonna do that.
Yeah, it
And
looks pretty fun. I mean, she just started. It looks pretty fun. I don't, but she's doing Fallout 76 also, so it's like, I don't know. And we might try to get back to
Diablo 4.
Diablo 4, yeah. Because the new season lets you customize weapons in a way that you couldn't before. And that's kind of a thing that Abby's into, that,
I
customizations.
kind of like that kind of thing
Yeah.
too.
So we might try that for that reason. Also, school being done and stuff. I don't know, it might be nice to get back to us playing something together. So
Yeah.
I don't know, we'll see. What else did you do over the week?
We are still doing Reservation Dogs, which, when you talked about Dances with Wolves, reminded me because we just watched an episode that guest starred. Bless you.
Abby.
That was a neat ventriloquist effect. Wes Studi guest starred on an episode, and he was one of the main guys from Dances with Wolves, and he's one of the preeminent indigenous actors you see in a lot of things. And it's really fun. There have been a few of them now where, like, big name indigenous actors show up as guest stars for like one episode. And I'm like, this must be so great that they can do like a comedic role, because these guys are amazing actors, but they always get cast in things where, like, they have to give big speeches about what the white man has done, and that kind of bullshit. And I'm like, now they can just fuck around, and it's pretty fun. And then they do a great job. The show kicks ass. Like,
Like
that show just kicks ass.
in Kimmy, was it Kimmy Schmidt?
Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. Yeah, I didn't see it, but that's what it
Oh,
was.
well, what's her name? The woman that was in 30 Rock.
Tina
Also,
Fey?
no. The blonde woman.
Jane Krakowski.
I don't remember her name. I guess that's it. She's in Kimmy Schmidt, and her parents are Native Americans. Like, I don't know, she was adopted, or I don't know, for some reason she doesn't look Native American, but, and I can't remember the actors, the actors they got to play her parents are pretty famous Native American actors, but I'm spacing all these names today. But anyhow, they got the chance to just sort of, crack jokes and be funny and stuff, and it was pretty hilarious. I thought it was, at first I thought it was a little bit like, wow, they're gonna do that, but like, it was actually funny.
There was an episode recently. There's a guy, I don't know him too well, but I've seen him in a lot of things. I mostly know him as he was the police captain in the first season of Forever Night, and it's really fun because he was like, the hard ass police captain, and in this he was the reclusive stoner uncle. So that was just fun. I love seeing it. But the show is just clever, and it's really tightly put together, and it's well done. It's a good show. I highly recommend it. And I did finally look it up. So it is done, but it only finished last year, and it wasn't canceled. The creators basically were like, this is the end of the story. So it's done, done. So.
It's on Hulu, you say.
It is on Hulu. Also on Hulu is a new documentary that I just really recommend. I was gonna watch it because I was mildly interested, but Trish was really interested. But it was awesome. It was awesome. It's called Bratz, and it's the story of those stupid little dolls. No, it is not. It's the Bratz in this context is the Brat Pack.
Oh, yeah.
And specifically, the movie is created and directed and everything by Andrew McCarthy. And it's basically 30 years since the article came out that called them the Brat Pack and made everything weird for them or whatever. He's decided he's gonna look at it like it really fucked him up, and it, in his opinion, sort of ruined his career and everything like that. And he decides he's gonna go out and talk to any of the old other members of the Brat Pack about the experience and what they've had since then. And it becomes a bigger thing where he talks to pop culture critics and other people about the whole thing. And at first, I was like, Andrew McCarthy's an idiot at this point, and this is just him trying to assuage his demons, and it's not very good, but it's engrossing. And then it went on, and I'm like, actually, I think this is really good. And then it went on further, and I started looking, because I'm not of that age. Trish solidly is. Like, when the Brat Pack was big, when the John Hughes movies were coming out, she was just at the age to consume those. I am younger. I loved Breakfast Club. I actually really like Some Kind of Wonderful. Most of the other classic ones, Pretty in Pink, Sweet 16, St. Elmo's Fire, all the other Brat Packy type movies, I didn't get into, and I never was really interested. But some of it was still there. So I came into this not being as interested. But it just becomes fascinating, and it about midway through, it clicked for me as an anthropological thing. And essentially the idea that these people were forced to become a symbol for a cultural movement while ignoring the fact that they were also people.
Yeah.
And like with any cultural movement, that sort of has to happen. Somebody ends up being the spokesperson for it, and sometimes you don't get to pick if that's who you are. And it's very interesting, and the editing's amazing on it, and I give a lot of credit to that because it has a very serious arc to the documentary. But every once in a while, there's little things they say that make me realize, oh, this actually was filmed after this other bit, even though it looked like it was like, so the editing helps a lot for the story, but there is a real transformative thing with Andrew McCarthy. And it made me realize he had to be the one to do this because he sort of is the biggest, like it hit him the hardest because of a lot of his own personal demons and stuff. And it really derailed him more than a lot of the other actors, and to the degree that some of the other actors sort of were okay with it. And I never knew that the Brat Pack hated being called the Brat Pack. Like, but apparently it was the thing. Well, and apparently at the time they were going on talk shows and stuff and talking about how like it pigeonholed them in a weird way. And the big thing is it made them seem like a group that went together and that, like a group of friends. And they're like, we weren't friends. Like, we were in a lot of movies together. We did hang out on occasion when we were filming and stuff. But like, it's not like we've kept in touch or anything. Like, it's not. And that's the thing. He makes a whole bunch of calls, and it's like, I haven't talked to this person in 30 years. I don't know that I'm selling it really well, but especially if you've ever had any interest in the history behind the Brat Pack. But if you are curious about just that kind of thing I'm talking about, a cultural shift and who ends up on the and for being the spokesperson of that, and how that can alter, it can dehumanize them in a certain way. I would recommend this documentary just about anybody. It's very good. It's only about 90 minutes, and it's really fascinating. At
Of
least it
course,
was to me.
these movies and these people were popular when I was in high school. And as you could probably guess, I was not interested in any of that at
Yeah,
all.
yeah, yeah,
I've only seen some of these movies because I was somewhere and everybody else wanted to watch it, you know, and I was just in the vicinity and I didn't sit down and watch these things because I was not interested. And the little pieces I saw proved that I was right, that I was just not going to like this
well, yeah,
kind of content.
because
So
you
I never
were a
cared.
fucking weirdo. So the whole thing with these movies is so many of the youth saw themselves in one or more characters in them.
Well, or my
But
perception was that they that was said, right? They see themselves. Oh, this is speaking to us. This is saying, this is telling our truth and our story that nobody's heard before. But what I saw was all my friends who weren't anything like these people thought they were really cool and sort of conformed to what they were seeing rather than the other way around. That was what I observed, but
all right. Let me put it this way. A lot of people believed they saw themselves.
I'm just saying. I didn't buy that
No.
whole thing about, oh, this is speaking, this is what this generation wants to say. No, that was ridiculous. It was just popular movies. And now I can't speak for everybody, of course. I'm just saying the people
Oh,
I
yeah,
observed in.
I'm a counter right here. I definitely, the Breakfast Club hit me because I saw aspects of myself in.
Really? Like,
Yes.
I'm interested in that. That's what I'm interested in, that kind of thing. So, in what way?
Just a lot of, I mean, Breakfast Club in particular deals with a lot of the struggles of high school, and I was very, Anthony Michael Hall made a lot of sense to me, and this whole idea of who you are versus who you're expected to be and all that, that rang true for me very
Interesting.
strongly.
Because remember in my school, like there was like 200 kids there. I had 32 in my graduating class. So any story I saw about like cliques and stuff, like I was in journalism club, I was in band, I was in drama club, I was a captain on the basketball team. You know, there wasn't, if a person wasn't doing all those things in school, nobody would be doing them. There just wasn't enough kids
Yeah.
to have cliques like they portrayed in these movies. So
Now, I feel like you might be conflating two concepts.
okay.
One being that character or those characters, I see myself in them. And another being, oh yeah, this movie is what my high school's like. Because it never was that for me anyway.
Fair.
But it's the characters and what they are dealing with and what they seem to be struggling with, and that there was a lot. But, and this comes up in the documentary, this was also the beginning of a huge shift. That's why I say a cultural shift. This was a point at which movies started being made for younger people. And
Well,
it's a
yeah,
shift
that's
that
true for sure.
basically hasn't stopped. But this was the 80s was when it started. They started making movies with young adults and teenagers and stuff, and people ate that shit up.
I mean,
And so they were just making a ton of them.
but like, what about things like, you know, Rebel Without a Cause? And I mean, they were making some content for younger people, you know, like the 50s and 60s too, don't you think? A little bit.
They're definitely, it wasn't that no movies existed for younger people,
Yeah.
but they were the exception.
Well, I think you might be right about that because another
And in
thing I
fact,
noticed.
even a lot of those movies about young people weren't for young people.
Well, that's true. And there were shifts in other parts of the system too, because like TV commercials were getting more and more geared toward young people at a time when the employment of young people wasn't as high as it is now. So therefore, a lot of the commercials were being targeted to people who didn't have any money. But that's where
Sure.
the commercials were targeting because, I mean, I guess they thought they could get money. I don't know. But that was a weird thing I remember noticing when in around that same time. It's like, why are all these commercials, you know, being focused on people who have no or very little money? But
This
that's a thing.
this was the era where the significance of the 18 to 24 demographic sort of started and has
Yeah.
just sort of never gone away.
Yeah, radio stations too. There was a little bit of a shift there. A lot of radio stations were very much geared toward what we would consider adult audiences. And then this thing happened in this time period that you're talking about, the whole adult contemporary genre. I mean, it's not that those songs didn't exist and they didn't sort of call them their own thing, but distinguishing a certain genre, like of current music, by the way, like people
Yeah.
were making current music, not old music, current music that was called adult contemporary. So
Yeah.
that was another interesting thing.
They also talk about that, some of the soundtracks in it, and like how kids in rural Midwest were getting into British synth pop because of these movies.
That's right.
I highly recommend it. It's a fascinating documentary. I'm going to talk for a second about video games. I'm still playing Starfield. I think I'm about 20 hours in. I don't know what it is, but I'm kind of feeling like other people, like, it's not hooking quite right. I'm enjoying it enough that I'm still sort of doing it, but I actually just find it kind of overwhelming. There's just so much to do. Which is a standard Bethesda thing, but something, I don't know, the fact that you have go to different planets and things, it just feels too overwhelming in some ways. But it's still got neat stuff, and I'm still playing it and getting into aspects of it. It is real fun. I finally have unlocked the ability to like modify things, and they don't give me a lot of stuff on that, and I was kind of nervous, and I finally picked up some machine to like modify weapons or whatever. Oh no, it's like almost identical to like Fallout. It's the way once you get the, it looks different, but it's the same sort of interface and everything, and I'm like, oh yeah. Yeah, I don't know. It's weird. But so a couple things jostled my head a little bit on something, and it made me realize I really do want to play the second Alan Wake game, which being me means I gotta play the first Alan Wake game, and it's not on Game Pass, so I actually fucking bought a game with money, the remaster of Alan Wake, and I only been playing it for a couple days, but it's pretty, I don't do a lot of horror games. I like horror movies. I don't know. Horror games just have kind of bounced off of me. And this one is in those lines. It's very Twin Peaksy. But it's a fun, spooky little time. I'm kind of digging it. I don't know how familiar you are with the game.
Not at all.
It's, well, okay. Here's the fun thing. So it's set in the same universe as Control. The company Remedy made Alan Wake. They made a game called Quantum Break, which did not do well, and they made Control, and they're all in the same universe. And in fact, there are references in Control to Alan Wake, and the second DLC that came out, you go to the location that Alan Wake took place in. So it's very tied in there. And it's very, especially the second one is very Twin Peaksy in that there are just so many layers. So like it's a game that like starts off, one of the earliest things you have is a you're walking through a tunnel and there's projected this live action singing and dancing that basically recaps the first game in a weird way. There's a dude who works for the video game company who makes this. I think he produced this game, and he and his likeness play three different characters in the game, in that he plays some like FBI agent, and then he plays the actor who is playing that in a movie that is sort of coming out or maybe isn't coming out, because it's a lot of like what's real, what's not stuff. And then some third character tied into the, like it's just bonkers, and it sounds very cool. And there are some very strong Silent Hill vibes and also Twin Peaks vibes, and it's just fun. It's renowned thriller author has writer's block, and he and his wife go to this little out of the way place to rent a cabin and have a vacation and re get re-inspired and shit, and then shit gets spooky. But yeah, it's pretty neat so far.
Cool.
All right, let's check our email because we actually have an email. Because Stu is a good person and the rest of you should be shamed.
All right, Stu says, with the price of all the streaming services going up, do you prefer digital or physical media purchases? Some background. We used to be CD, DVD, Blu-ray for everything. Over time, we switched to buying digital and now just tend to stream. I meant to give away all my physical media. They're all boxed up in the basement, ready to go, but now I'm glad I was too lazy and I'm starting to get back into physical ownership. I have a copy of Dogma, and the distribution rights mean I will never, or it will never be available to stream.
That is true. Dogma is basically not around anymore, which is a shame. I do like that movie.
I've never personally gotten over the whole like Blu-ray ownership thing. I still like that. I still do that. Sometimes, there's like these special tin packaging and everything you can get. Still do that because the thing about Dogma, that's one reason. I mean, I just don't, why should I purchase something digitally and trust that, it's not going to get taken away or it won't be available
Yeah.
or whatever else. I don't trust that stuff. So,
Well,
also,
and it happens. The terms and conditions mean I've bought things on Amazon that I own, and they could just take them away tomorrow, and I can't do nothing about it.
exactly right. So, also, if my internet's out or something, my TV still works. Right? It's nice to be able to go, oh, let's watch this. I mean, the thing I love about streaming is I've always been particular about what I buy. I don't have a huge sprawling collection because I'm very picky about what I buy. And sometimes I'm picky about what I keep. Like if I buy something, I think, oh, this is cool, I buy it, and then I never watch it, and then it doesn't hold, it doesn't hold up or whatever, then I'll get rid of it. So the space that I have for storing this stuff is actually not a lot and probably never will be. But it's nice with streaming, I can watch things without having to rent or buy. I can sometimes watch things several times without ever having to buy it. And so that's nice to have that sort of middle ground between, buying something or having something that you like and you even like watching it a few times, but you're, for example, I'll give you an example. Like all the new Godzilla or Kaiju movies, I like watching them. I've watched them a couple times. I'll probably watch them a few more times. Am I ever going to own them? I don't think they've crossed that threshold, right? They're fun, but I mean, I don't. It's nice to have movies in that area that you can watch and enjoy. But if those movies disappeared because of copyright or whatever, I'm not going to go, darn, I should have, or rush out to get it on Blu-ray because I don't care about them that much. Does that make sense? So
Yeah.
yeah, but I still am a big, I still will, as long as I can buy actual media copies of something, if I like it, I'm going to keep doing that. I don't know how long it's going to be though, because like music CDs, like there aren't any music CD stores really around here. Best Buy, I don't think, carries them anymore. There used to be a store dedicated to just that in the mall. That's not there anymore. I mean, you can still get things on Amazon, I suppose, but point is that the fewer people buy these things, the less lucrative it is for them to be made and sold. So people like me who like them, it might be out of luck pretty soon. I don't know.
I mean, there'll probably always be a collector's niche. I mean, you can still get shit on vinyl.
Well, that's true, but then the price goes up, right?
That is
And
true.
so that's how that works.
My sister and her family are very similar to you. In fact, for quite a while, and to a degree still now, they won't, there are shows they really like on streaming services they won't pay for. They just wait till the Blu-ray comes out of the season and they buy it.
Yeah, I've been that way. I've done that for sure.
I am looking at a tremendous pile of physical media that has been sitting, collecting dust, quite literally, for decades. It has a lot of old video games, which I'm now kind of happy about because I have an Xbox and they have a lot more backwards compatibility. And I have games here that you can't get online that theoretically will work if I put it in my Xbox.
Nice.
I haven't. I haven't even looked at what's there. I know of one because it is a famously terrible video game, and I'm so glad I have a copy because I'm like, this could be worth collector's money someday because it is like well known for sucking. And I actually played the whole thing and thought it was fine. I mean, I get why people think it sucks, but it is playable. I did it. I am looking at a lot of things I got. I'm looking at a lot of DVDs and Blu-rays still in the plastic wrap. I am looking at gifts I've gotten that I've very much appreciated. Many, many years ago, I got the entire Farscape series on Blu-ray. I
Wow.
love Farscape.
That Farscape was awesome.
And Peacekeeper Wars was not available on Blu-ray, but they got me the DVD of it. And I love Farscape. It's one of my favorite shows ever. Haven't touched it. I spent a long time buying physical media because that's what you did. And we would do a thing. If we saw a movie and we really liked it, we would buy the DVD of it. I don't re-watch anything like ever in my life. I just don't. The only time I rewatch stuff is if it's like, oh, I haven't seen that in 20 years. I remember it fondly, but I wonder if it holds up now. Or I wonder if I'd get something different out of it now. And so then I'll rewatch it. Or like, I saw this and it's so long ago, I don't even remember it. So maybe, and I'm still interested, so let's watch it. There are exceptions. Ted Lasso, which I'm just about done with season two, so we'll move on to season three. But like I've said many times, I've watched exactly one MCU movie more than once. And I saw all of those fuckers, except Incredible Hulk for some reason. And I only see the other one twice. I just don't rewatch stuff, and I don't have FOMO for old, like, it sucks that Dogma will never be available on streaming. I probably wouldn't watch it again if it was.
Yeah.
And I am fine with the fact that I haven't, that I can't. Like, I have lots of streaming services and I like them, and I occasionally buy things digitally if that's sort of the only option. We've gotten much more sort of chill about, oh, this is only available if we give $4 to Prime or whatever, and we'll watch it. We've been to rent. I don't care. I want to care almost, but like, I still think I care when I find out, oh, you can never watch this. I'm like, oh shit, I really like that. But I also know I wouldn't watch it again. I just don't do that. And I don't know what that is exactly. I used to have touchstones. I watched the first two Beverly Hills Cop movies until I broke the VHS tapes. I watched Princess Bride at least once a day, every day for an entire summer. Sometimes more than once. I don't know what it is.
I would say that I also tend not to read or watch things more than once. But there are exceptions, like some of the ones you just mentioned. And when the kids were living at home,
Well, yeah,
that was a big
the
reason to watch
children.
things more than once.
Oh,
Yeah. Yeah.
yeah. We only got no choice in that shit.
But like we've watched Black Sails more than once, that series.
Yeah.
So every once in a while, I think we've watched Battlestar Galactica, the newer one, more than once. Some things are just so good the first time, and even the next time is even better because you notice things you didn't notice and stuff. It's just some things are like that. For me,
Especially
for
with
me.
TV shows, I can't do that because I'm like, maybe I'm like, oh, I should watch this 2 hour movie again, see what I get out of it different, as opposed to, oh, I should watch this 70 episode show that I know all the twists and everything because I've seen it. Like, I can't do it. I
Yeah.
can't. Sometimes I think I want to. There are also things I very deliberately don't, because I'm like, I really liked it, and when I think about it, I am not gonna feel the same
Seeing
now,
it again. Well, I mean,
and I don't want to ruin how I think of it.
sure, like The Postman, this is the second time I've seen it. I think I saw it in the theater when it came out. So I was a little I remember liking it. I was a little worried, like, oh, maybe it is crap, and that's what I'll decide. No, it was pretty much what I remembered. But yeah, there's a
Well,
lot
and
of
there's
things are
some
more
that
so.
are like, I'm really curious to see if they're crap because it's not
Yeah.
something that I cared about. But there are
Sure.
some that are like beloved films that I'm like, well, like I was really scared to rewatch Goonies.
I've never even seen that.
And it has several things that are just freakishly problematic. Like there are just a couple of bits. Couple of recurring gags and things, and a couple of portrayals that are just cringy as shit. But to my delight, outside of those things, holds up. It's a real good film. I was pleased. But yeah, a lot of that stuff. I don't think I'll probably ever watch Back to the Future for the same reason. I only finally saw Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure a while back, and I get why people loved it. It's got some issues too, but I don't know. It just doesn't. It's not a thing I do. This may be, you and I had a very long talk about like sentimentality and nostalgia at Pancakes, and this might be like that. I'm like, yeah, it was great. I got what I want out of it. We move on. Exceptions are. When I think I could get something new in my current age, and usually it has to be like I haven't seen it in decades. And exceptions for watching things with other people who haven't seen them. I'll do that with Trish some. She and I'll both do that. Well, the whole old movies thing. Sometimes the answer is, have you seen this? No, me neither. But sometimes the thing is, have you seen this? No. Oh my God, you got to see this. And so then, or like right now, we're sort of redoing the Mad Max movies, and that's including the ones I've already seen. And there are exceptions. Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome, in no way is it one of my favorite movies. Not even on the radar of what my favorite movies are. I think I've seen it 3 or 4 times. It's just fun. It's just real. It's an easy, entertaining watch. And
I
I'm
thought
a
so.
lot of times it has been showing other people the film, but.
Yeah, I mean, this was the first time I'd ever seen it, well, a couple weeks ago,
Yeah.
and I kind of liked it. I thought, yeah, this
It's
isn't bad. And I liked
fun.
Tina Turner in it, which
Yeah.
I've never like disliked Tina Turner, but she's never been like, I've never been a huge fan or whatever. And I'm like, wow, she's really pretty great in this.
There's a lot of fun, somewhat scenery chewing action or acting in it, that I really kind of enjoy. And some just ridiculous lines that I love, most of which are Tina Turner. Tina Turner gets some of the most like unnatural but just so fun lines. And she nails it every time. But yeah, it's there's such a huge swath now of quality message entertainment, how clearly I remember it, like all of these things mesh in a way that even I can't process to determine if I give a shit about rewatching something. But the general answer is no, I still remember it. Let's move forward to new stuff. And this is something that may change as I get older, because this is another one of those, like, this thing keeps that shit in there real well.
Yeah, I think I do too.
But it's starting to go. And so
Okay.
maybe as it starts to go, I'm going to be like, oh, I don't remember that movie as well. Let me rewatch it because I really liked it.
I
But.
think for me too, I kind of have a, as everyone by now knows, I have an evolving relationship with fiction. So like rewatching kaiju movies, for example, right? Because my feelings about that genre change. Like, and I start to appreciate it in ways I didn't appreciate before. So then I think, well, if I watch this movie again, you know, now that I've sort of my
Yeah.
feelings about this genre have evolved, maybe it'll be different, which does happen.
Yeah.
So
And I've had that with a few things. I've now probably seen Starship Troopers like three times. And one of those was for Trish to watch it, but one of those was the day we all fucking woke up and were like, "Oh wait, he was being facetious." And then I watched the movie again and was like, holy shit, this is a really good movie. I did not like this movie, but now I like this movie. And sometimes that is really a thing. Sometimes there's like, oh wow, I was really into that or I really hated that. But now I think I would have a very different reaction,
Right,
which
right.
either may prompt me to want to watch it or may prompt me to never want to touch it again.
Right.
And that does happen, but I don't know. Not there. There's a weird inertia thing of like, why am I rewatching something where I could just watch something new? And to a degree, I have this in video games. I get itches, and I'll start playing video games again. And again, I don't know what prompts that. I don't know why I have restarted Fallout 4 like 5 times. And put probably 1,000 hours into it. Like, I don't. But other games that I think I like better. I've never replayed Mass Effect. I tried to replay the first one early on and couldn't manage to do it. Every once in a while, I'm like, oh, I should replay those. I don't think I will.
I think
They
the
were really
common.
good. They were very important to me. They are some of my favorite games. No, I will.
Yeah, I think the theme that's coming up for both of us here is if we think we can get something new out of it.
And
That's
I think
definitely
I
right.
seldom do.
Right. But like with Fallout, the last time you started a Fallout game again is you wanted to RPG it in a particular way.
Yes. And that was fun. And then when it stopped being fun, I stopped doing it
Right. I think I'm the
pretty early
same.
on.
I think I'm the, that includes watching it with another person, right? It's like, oh, if I watch it with this person, it might be a slightly different experience, or I can have a different conversation. So it probably always is like, yeah, I'll do this again if I think, if I have some good reason to think I'm going to get something new out of it. I think that's why I read books again too, is because it's like, I'm a different person now. And that Starship Troopers is a great example, right? Where you go, oh, wait, I was in the wrong mind space when I saw this the first time, so I'm going to see this again. I think that's why I read anything a second time or watch anything a second time. There's something I think I'm going to get new out of it. I think you've hit it
But
exactly.
my inherent, I guess, laziness or whatever means that that's my motivation, but it has to reach a critical mass for me to actually do it.
Yeah. I think that's true for me too. Yeah.
Lars von Trier, a great example. I should probably rewatch Showgirls. I saw that in the theater and was a horny teenager and had a girl I had a crush on, it was her idea to see it. Should have loved it. Did not care for it. But again, in later years, I'm like, oh, there's a satirical element to this and why it's like this. It's trashy to make sort of a statement or whatever. And I'm like, I should revisit. It's kind of like a Starship Trooper. Never have. So many things. We're talking about Farscape now. I'm like, holy shit, I should really rewatch that. Guess what? Bet I won't. Bet I won't.
Well, for me, I guess I don't think of it as laziness. I think of it as, life is short. I don't have time. There's lots of things I have never watched or read that I want to. I have a hard time getting to those too. So redoing something, there's got to be a really good reason. There's got to be a good
Yeah,
reason.
I mean, I say you say that, and I don't disagree, but also the amount of hours I spend doing jack all. I mean, you would not believe how much time of this short life I waste. But I'm really getting into a place where if I get tired of a video game, I just stop playing. And unfortunately, that means I'm not finishing a lot of video games lately.
Yeah,
But it
that's
turns
sad.
out apparently that's normal. Like,
Oh.
if you look, because now you can look at achievement and trophy data and stuff and see what percentage get it. And there's frequently achievements and trophies for finishing this milestone in the game, this milestone in the game, and the end of the game. And like most games, most people who play them don't finish them.
Yep. Well, it's true in this house
And
for
I used
sure.
to be one of those that I would always, especially because I don't play games that tend to be hard. And lately, especially with Game Pass now, no, I'm just jumping around. I mean, y'all have heard me talk about a lot of games. I haven't beat any of the ones I've been talking about. We're still not done with Harold Hallowed. We're working on it, but it's getting a little tedious, but we're gonna finish it. And I got a bunch of new ones. I'm at the point now where so many games come through on Game Pass that when I see there are new games and I look and I'm not interested, like I'm delighted. I'm like, yay, not more games. Because I've already got 40 that I installed that I think I want to play that I haven't touched yet.
Do you have a sense of your sort of, I don't know what else to call this. This is going to sound stupid and silly, but sort of your geek identity, like, is it like heavily one thing more than other, like gaming more than other things, or do you think you're
At a
just a
certain point,
well-rounded?
I had to admit that video games are my primary hobby. They weren't always, but nowadays they really are. Horror movies have also become a big one, which again didn't used to be. But I don't know. I don't think I adhere them to my identity in the same way. Like I'm definitely a geek and into a lot of nerdy stuff and things like that. But it just varies what it is. And I think that may be again like my primary identity is as a unique and strange individual, and always has been. I don't
I
like being part
know.
of groups.
But sometimes when geeks get together, they get a little, oh yeah, I'm a gamer. Oh, I'm a comic person. Oh, I'm a this, I'm a that. Sometimes that happens. I mean,
And I do like I think about and talk about those things, but it's not I'm a video game person. It's I play a lot of video games. And it is interesting over there. I was one of those that was fantasy and not sci-fi when I was younger. Because I come from a long family of readers, and my sister is much more fantasy based, and I think I sort of got it from her. And also the third grade teacher that got me into reading got me into fantasy things. And I sort of wasn't into sci-fi. And I don't think that's an uncommon path for a lot of people. Older I get now, I'm very into sci-fi. And a lot of science fantasy, which is the same sort of thing. And yeah, video games. I mean, I've always had video games. I skipped a pretty formative generation of video games because I was in college. And so we didn't give a shit because we were busy with sex, drugs, and rock and roll. And term papers. But like I had an original, well, first I had an Atari. I had an Atari that I it was a hand-me-down, and then I got a Nintendo, and then I had a Sega Genesis, and I played all of these a lot. And then after my Sega Genesis, I had nothing I played a little on PC, like Final Fantasy VII came out on PC, and I played that a little bit, but I had nothing until a PlayStation 2, which I got early in my relationship with Trish. The argument being it was also a DVD player, which we did not have at the time.
Right.
And then since then, it's video games all the way down. The PS2, and then I got an Xbox, and I got a PS3, and I got an Xbox 360, and I got a PS4, and now I have a Xbox Series X. I have a Nintendo Switch. I got a Nintendo D Game Boy Advance. I'm pretty in there now. Role-playing games like tabletop were a very big part of my identity. They are becoming less of one. Because a lot of my mental health issues spilled over into that. And so I am hesitant now. He said, knowing he's playing D&D in 6 hours. But just overall, I do less of that lately. Yeah, no, I got a lot of different things. I mean, and I'm also one of those, porn is a big part of my whole deal. I am quite, I mean, A, I'm a pervert, but I'm also like interested in it sort of academically in a way. Like playing around with those AI bots and stuff. And I'd say that's a big thing. I mean, it's obviously not a thing that comes up socially as often, but
Sure.
that's a big part of me and certain groups of people. Yeah, that's the thing. I am fascinated by it, by the idea of like this sliver of geekdom and this sliver of geekdom. And I also think I've had some firsthand experiences now with relationships that I made because we're all nerds who like nerd stuff that then proved to be fairly incompatible in part because we were just into different nerd stuff or less or more into certain things. Common interests as a basis for a relationship is always fraught, in my opinion. That is a very, it is a very good first step, but you have to build something more pretty quick or it's not going to work, in my opinion. There has to be more to it. I've had too many people with common interests that we did not make good friends. And I've had people where I have almost none of the same interests, but we developed a bond and rapport over other things. So
Interesting.
now I'm getting all philosophical and maudlin, and we are out of time. So, Stu's the favorite right now by a healthy margin because he wrote in if you would like to dethrone Stu, and wouldn't we all, write in themagicaltalkinghead@gmail.com. With your kind of thing, and we might talk about it like we just might have talked about Stu's thing. I don't
Don't you think you should
know.
thank Stu and Welsh?
Ben Wethy, Lucky Gummy. And that's spelled with five Y's. Also go to the blog, themagicaltalkinghead.com. This is fun actually.
My
So I
God.
told you at Pancakes, I unearthed a bunch of old photos recently, like physical photos, and a bunch of them were from my trip to the UK when I spent the semester in the UK, including a bunch when I was walking the Pembrokeshire Coast Path in North Wales. So there was recently a episode of Doctor Who, where they went to North Wales in the relative present, and they were up on the hills and everything, and it was so much like it that like literally when a few days later I found these pictures and I was going through, I was like, oh my God, this shot, I think there's a TARDIS like just to the left of the like this might literally be the same place. So that was very cool to see. I want to get back there. I like Wales a lot. I have an American accent when I speak it, and that's my problem. That's what it comes from. Anyway, go to the blog, magictalkinghat.com, and make your comments in English or in Cymric or whatever. and listen again next week, which is going to get weird because we're going to record it tomorrow. And so we will have recorded another episode before this one even airs. Am I blowing your mind?
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.